I grew up kind of a boring life in Las Vegas, of all places, which I don't like to admit to many people because it's a fun place to visit, but it's not really a place I consider home anymore. I do like going and hanging out with friends. Obviously, the occasional bender out in Vegas is always fun. But I moved out to the Bay Area in 2000 and started working at dot-coms at the tail end of that in the tech space. Ended up working at Tech TV and starting there in 2002, late 2002, kind of behind the scenes. Eventually ended up doing segments on a show called The Screensaver. So I was actually on air
And
talent.
where was this?
This is in San Francisco.
Got it. And how did you end up in SF?
I just moved out here working with, I was actually doing some marketing. I was doing ad buys and helping them track the conversions
For Tech TV.
no, for a little startup, a CMGI funded startup. It was an online furniture store. We thought we were going to make billions. But it turns out people don't like to pay the shipping for really heavy furniture on the internet. So
Like kettlebells.
yeah, it didn't work out. Yeah, it was very heavy stuff. So, anyway, ended up hosting a television show on the Screensavers. The name of the show was called The Screensavers on Tech TV, and then started my own first startup, which was called Dig, which is a social news site, and that grew that to a pretty decent size. Started a couple other companies. Ended up angel investing, sold a few companies, got acquired by Google. Long story short, had a big, long, 7, 8, 9, 10 year run in the tech space, and then eventually ended up as a venture capitalist at Google Venture. So I'm a VC there that is, funding companies and helping find the next big thing. I can remember analyzing people and trends all the way back in high school. The first time I remember it, I remember there was this one kid in my class that he wore a fluorescent orange jumpsuit to school. It was like a garbage man, like what the garbage man would wear, you know? And
Or an inmate.
yeah, or an inmate, exactly. And so he was wearing that, and I remember everyone thought that was the coolest thing. And everyone's like, oh, he's got that jumpsuit on and blah, blah. And like kids started going out and like literally buying these. You could buy them. They weren't made by Dickies, but a very similar brand. And they sold them. Actually, I think that maybe they were made by Dickies, but they sold them at Kmart. And so kids started buying them wearing the high school. And I remember at that point, I realized that there are certain very early adopters, like tastemakers. I was like, if you could only, like, this person can spread a trend. And at the time, I was thinking about fashion. Cause like this kid was like considered by many other classmates to be like the cool kid, right? And so once he did something, he would influence all these other people. And so I started thinking about, like, it just made me think, like, what could I make that he would think was cool? And then it would spread throughout the class. That was like what I got excited about. And then I just realized that I kept coming up with all these ideas. And I've always been the kind of person that just like starts to think about, and I think it was just something that actually hurt me in school because I was always daydreaming about different things. And I actually got really crappy grades and just like, didn't do well in school because my mind was always someplace else. And I think that it was always, once I got connected up with computers, and I got really into computers, it was always about what I could build with software. And so, I built a couple little things that I launched as shareware and had on shareware blogs and stuff like that and made some money. And then it kind of clicked that, you write the software once, you charge for it, and you don't have to keep paying to have it made. You can just make more and more copies.
Money while you sleep.
And it was insane, And so like that clicked. And then I started thinking about like, what are the things that I would like as a consumer and that I feel could spread and like really take off. And then, it was kind of like analyzing these companies and looking at these different things and seeing them and being that early adopter where you want to play with everything. I think you have to have like a
You do play
natural.
with, the number of apps you have on your phone is incredible to me.
You have to have like a natural curiosity. You have to like say, okay, I want to like, I get excited. I get a hit of like freaking dopamine and like my like flutters in the stomach when I see something that is new and original and has never been done before. When you were looking at Twitter, there was two things that really caught my attention. One was that Jack Dorsey, the guy that created it, had created a model that was not about mutual friendship. So up until this point, it was about, Facebook and MySpace and others, you had to send a friend request and someone had to accept your friend request. And that's the way that a social relationship happened on the internet. Jack was smart enough to think like, hey, well, maybe it doesn't have to be like that. Maybe you can tail and like kind of like follow someone that you don't actually know. Mm-hmm. And so when he created that, I remember thinking like, wow, this is crazy. Like there was a bunch of like influential people that started to sign up, you know, and I was like, I can kind of like peek over their shoulder and kind of be with them on this journey that they're going on and like watch what they're up to without actually knowing them. And I was like, wow, okay, what if celebrities actually figure out how to use this thing? And it's really easy because all you have to do to tweet is send a text message. And then, you know, you saw a celebrity or two sign up and I'm like, okay, this is going to be pretty huge because if this keeps happening and more celebrities sign up, it's going to be their platform because they don't know how to blog. They don't have
it's low labor,
like the barrier to entry is extremely low. You can misspell everything and it can be two sentences and it's still like content, right? And so seeing that and then also figuring out that a follower count wasn't portable. So if you think about like you have an email newsletter, you can move that from email provider to email provider.
AWeber to MailChimp to whatever.
You can't move your followers to Facebook. You can't move your followers, so that it was very defensible in that way. And seeing those couple things and thinking like, okay, well, this could be something. And again, I didn't know. It was just like, it was a gamble. And a lot of angel investing is for me is going on your gut. And so I placed a bet and just happened to win there. But like, I think that for me, it's like hopefully finding an insight like that. And then also finding something that you yourself like plays to like me as a consumer. Like I think I'm kind of an every man, like every woman, every, I don't know if I'm a woman, but I mean, like, I didn't mean that, but
you are like every woman,
I am like every woman. But no, seriously though, I think that like I kind of feel like if it's something that will appeal to me and I can see myself using it on a daily basis, like I'm going to open my phone to do this 2 to 3 times per day.
Right.
It could be a big deal. And I think that like, you know, that's what I look for. That's when I'm trying to, you know, find the next Instagram or whatever it may be. It's like, I'm looking for something I'm going to use on a daily basis. Something that's going to sit in my, you know, there's like 20 spaces on your iPhone in the default screen. Like, what are one of those icons going to be? Is there going to be something that's that prominent, that is that important that it will take up some of that real estate, some of the default real estate on my home screen? Yeah, I mean, I think that there's been a few of those, not too, like within the last even year and a half or so, I've gone into a handful of deals that are now starting to work out. Like Nextdoor, I think is a great example.
Yeah, one
that I invested in maybe a year and a half ago
that we both invested in.
Yeah, so it was like it's a neighborhood social network, and I think that there was a lot of people that were like, I just, you know, I don't know what that's all about or what it means, and for me, you know, it's funny. It's like, I don't want to come off on this podcast sounding like I'm a know-it-all because like I've been wrong on a lot of deals.
Yeah.
But like every once in a while you kind of like see a market before it's about to happen. And then sometimes you just miss it all together. Like Pinterest, I had an opportunity to invest very early on, saw it, liked it, ended up passing, and I'm kicking myself every single day.
Right.
But, you know, Nextdoor was one where I saw it and I was like, okay, well, this is connecting neighbors on a very social level, which I like because it's something where in San Francisco and big cities, we don't know our neighbors. It's not like you can walk across the street and be like, oh, hey, Jim, how's it going? You know, like you might know one house in any direction, but not two or three houses. You don't know who those people are. So the idea of like creating that social fabric so that you can have like ad hoc things come together, like social, like neighborhood watch programs, like and eventually like commerce on top of a neighborhood graph, which I think is really interesting.
What like types of commerce,
like goods being sold. Like I see couches for sale on Nextdoor, which were for sale on Craigslist, you know, 6 months ago. So things like that trusted neighborhood network are starting to create really unique opportunities for people to exchange goods and services. You know, there's like a plumber that was on there last week being like, hey, I'm a plumber. I live in the neighborhood. If anybody ever needs me, you know, it's just a different platform that was created, out of neighborhoods that of like people getting to know each other in their local neighborhood. I thought was interesting. And I think that, you know, a year and a half ago that nobody was really talking about it. Nobody just really thought it was that exciting. Working in Olive Garden, I made breadsticks there. I smelled like garlic all the time.
I think it's important. This is something a mutual friend of ours has said as well, Chris Saka, that I think it's important to have had at least one shitty job, preferably in the service industry. I don't know. I think it really teaches you a lot about yourself and service and humankind in general. So you were making the breadsticks in the back. Did you ever have a like busboying or waitering job or anything like that? If not, I forgive you.
No, not really. I was never a waiter. I mean, I would see people at tables at Olive Garden as well. But like don't hate on my breadsticks. Breadsticks were a tough job, dude. Like those waiters would get pissed at you if you didn't have the breadsticks out on time because they made their tips on breadsticks.
They made their way. How do they make their tips
because
on breadsticks?
You had to have breadsticks on the table, dude. Breadsticks always have to be on the table. I still have dreams about this. Breadsticks need to be on the table. If the customers don't have their breadsticks, they are not
They're
happy.
They're pissed, yeah. They
it's all in. You can eat breadsticks and salad.
That's a lot of breadsticks.
I mean, dude, it's a lot of breadsticks. I was cranking out, like, at any given time, there's two big-ass trays of breadsticks going on in the Olive Garden in the oven. I think that it's Philip Rosedale is the first person to come to mind.
Philip's awesome. Do you want to tell us a little bit of just to so people know who Philip is?
So it's interesting. In that, it's weird that actually when I think about that, I would pick Philip. And the reason being is that Philip, so thank you for the wine. I wonder if that's picking up the speaker. It sounds like you're like,
I want I'm aggressively pouring. So thank we'll be you. Picked up by this mic.
So Philip, created, a virtual world back in the day that was really popular way before its time called Second Life. Mm-hmm. And it became extremely popular and, later, like all internet things, eventually declined in usage because it just wasn't as cool as it was when it came out. And he then went on to start a company that, you know, he tinkered around with a handful of different things. They didn't quite work out. And now he's on to his next thing called High Fidelity. But the reason that I say Philip is that success in my mind doesn't necessarily mean like huge IPOs and exits and things like that. The thing that I like about him, and I shot a couple of video interviews with him on my series on Foundation that you can search Philip Rosedale Foundation on Google and find, but
Foundation.kr.
Foundation.kr. But the
because
thing,
you let the .com slip.
Right. Foundation.com was not available.
The .net? Which one did you lose?
It was .bz or something like that. And I let .kr slip, but I got it back. Okay. So anyway, the thing I like about Philip is that he is such a rare person to discover. I feel like I'm lucky that I even know him because he's a big thinker. He's a crazy mad scientist. Yep. When you watch his interview, you realize that his ideas and his passion and just where his head takes things is so unique and so big picture, like bigger than you could ever dream up on your own. Like when you think of ideas, we're like, oh, wouldn't it be better if there was a better way to keep our, you know, like, and it's something like super stupid that you want. Like, you know, like I feel like our ideas are like, you know, just improvements of the, that's already incremental, like pre-existing, like little problems that we have that like my toilet paper runs out. I'd like to get a notification. Like it's like dumb stuff, right? You talk to him and like you realize that like he is thinking about things like virtual economies and like currencies and using your iPhone as a miniature computer while you're sleeping that does little virtual tasks and assist people like in other places. And you're like, dude, you like they will someday when you finally have that moment, that idea that is the right idea at the right time, when it hits, like they will write books about this guy and movies about this guy. It's rare to find those people. When people don't have fear, they aren't scared of big ideas. Hmm. I meet a lot of entrepreneurs every single day, and all they want to do is do incremental improvements on pre-existing stuff because it's safe.
They want to sell a company for $20 million.
They can sell it for $20 million to Yahoo. They can sell it for $10 million to Google, whatever it may be. There's a safety net there. Who wants to go and create an electric car company? Yeah. Who wants to go and create a freaking next generation like spaceship company? Like these are hard problems, you know. Yeah. And it takes a certain kind of person,
and they're binary too, right? I mean, you either you don't exactly. partially succeed,
right? You either succeed or fail, and it's like, and Philip is one of those guys that he's just like, I have a crazy idea, I'm gonna go build it, and I don't care what, nothing's gonna get in my way. I can just do it, like, and I don't know how to do it right now, but I can figure it out because I'll surround myself with smart people. And that's what he does. And it's like, those people are really rare, man. Like I see so many just, you know, it's not a lot of like willing to throw everything out and just start from scratch and tackle something that is going to change the world. And when you find those people, and I've only met a couple, then you get really excited and you feel lucky just to know them.
Outside of computers, if you could study with any expert in the world, who would you study with and what would you study?
I would probably pick some type of meditation guru. And I know this is totally doable, but like, I think that like the issue that I have now, is that I feel that all of this computer, like the computers and the constant like stimulus and all this, like, you know, I don't know about you, but like, there's no such thing as, it's extremely blurred, the personal time versus work time. And so like, you know, I'll be at dinner and like, you know, it's not this bad because Daria makes me shut down the laptop at dinner, but like, you know what I mean? It's like, it bleeds into everything that you do. Sure. And so because of that, I feel like my brain is being slowly scrambled. Like, I feel like Your brain is always on edge. It's being fragmented. And I feel that like, we're going to realize in short order here in the next 10, 20 years that like, all of this distraction and stuff is really messing with our brains. And I feel that like, I need to find that balance and I haven't done that yet. So I think if I could study with anyone, it would probably be like a 2 or 3 month, like just straight up retreat with like some like awesome Buddhist monk somewhere that would teach me, you know, walking meditation or whatever it may be, like some way to like gain my soul back.
Kevin has lost his soul. I mean, that would be the title of this podcast. No, Kevin Rose loses his soul.
As long as it's like Tim Tim Talk Talk, Kevin Rose loses his soul. No, but seriously though, I feel like it's so hard. I hear hard, you.
It's easy to feel lost.
Pet peeves. One of the things that drives me insane is that I feel as though in our industry there are a lot of people
that are tech,
that aren't really direct. It drives me nuts when people beat around the bush and really you just need to say the truth because like, even though it's painful and it stings now, at least people know where you stand.
Yeah.
And
it
saves everyone a ton of time. And I feel that that's like,
what would be an example of that? Well, what circumstance?
It just feels that, you know, I see this all the time. And even my world in the venture capital world, like a lot of people will say, I recently changed the way that I say no to people now.
This is of great interest to me.
I would say that the majority of the time, like venture capitalists, when you go out and you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to raise some money and, you know, you meet with someone at a VC firm and they sit down and they say, oh, show me your idea. And then you go through it. And then typically you get an email 24 to 48 hours later saying, this is how we want to proceed or not proceed. And oftentimes the email on not proceeding is like, you know, I talked with our partnership and I don't think it's a good fit at this time. Or, you know, I'm so busy with my current investments that I don't think I have time to take on anything new, but thank you for your time. And like,
let's talk in 6 months or whatever.
It's such BS, man. And it's just like, I was like, it's funny. I just, the other day I was sitting there, I was writing a no, like saying no to someone email, which for me, in the past has typically been like, you know, thought about it, really don't think it's something that we want to invest in. Thanks, but I'd love to talk to you in the future, blah, 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 right? The typical one that you read everywhere else, right? Yeah. And then, you know, I just started thinking like, gosh, there's got to be, I'm going to try and be very direct with the entrepreneur and just like see what the response is like, because I feel like that's just like, I might come off as a dick. And that's the worry, right? The concern is that you just come off like you're just being
a dick and they shit talk you out other places.
But you know what? Blah, blah, blah. But I think that like at least people will be like, you know what? We know where he stands.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I tried it for the first time last week, actually. And the entrepreneur wrote back and he was like, dude, thanks for being honest. I appreciate it.
What was your wording? I'm curious because this is something I think a lot of people battle with. How to say no.
So I like the idea. I thought that the space was generally really boring.
Yeah.
I didn't know how big a business it would become. I thought that they had decent traction. They were clearly going to get their next round of funding because of that traction. But it wasn't something where I was going to be over the top excited about to answer their emails and get pumped up about, right? And so I wrote the guy an email and I was like, listen, I don't think I'm the right partner for you. I think the idea is sound, but I am not excited about this space at all. It doesn't get me excited. And I just don't think like when you need someone to reach out to and to help you out, like I'm going to be the one that's going to jump back and be the right partner, you know, more or less. And he wrote back and he's like, dude, thanks for the direct feedback or honest feedback. And, you know, look forward to see you next time you're in town because he's out of town.
Cool.
And it was like, it was the first time where I was like, wow, that actually that's like,
it's also a good founder. You know, and can take it.
I've done that before on working with some engineers. And I feel like it just, it always, I kind of like, I want to start living by that because I think it's the right thing to do.
Seems like you're surprisingly comfortable having uncomfortable conversations. And I've seen you do this live a couple of times where you're asking for things that perhaps other people wouldn't ask for, but that you should ask for. Or you're saying things that maybe you shouldn't say by some politically correct standard, but you do. And how did you get to that point? Because it seems like the reason a lot of people fail in whether it's negotiating for a raise or negotiating any type of deal or asking for anything they want or coming clean and avoiding some huge fucking PR scandal just by being honest at the outset, they're not willing to have those uncomfortable conversations. So why do you think you're so comfortable doing that?
I think it's probably because I want to avoid an even more difficult conversation down the road if I'm caught not speaking the truth the first time around.
Yeah.
It's a lot more difficult to have the conversation to say like, oh, yeah, I kind of wasn't like fully bringing everything to light in this original conversation. So, and I feel like I don't know, man, like if you admit your faults, then other people can't point them out in you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
Like if I get
It's the same thing with like stand up comics who take the piss. That's a really fucking Commonwealth expression, but make fun of themselves before the audience can,
right?
To just like steal the thunder in that way, so that they can run the show and do what they want to do.
Yeah, maybe that's that. I think I'd never thought about this before. It's funny that you bring it up, but like I feel like that's probably the reason why, because I want to say everything there is to be said that's negative. So that we can get that out of the way. Let's so I don't have to be ridiculed in some way. Like, yeah. I think that at Dig, especially, we were under a lot of scrutiny all the time.
Yeah.
Because we had such a very vocal audience, like that was taking down sites and servers, and because we had so much traffic.
Took down my server. First time my servers got taken down, I remember very clearly it was in New York City. And I had this very odd blog post called From Geek to Freak, How I Gained 34 Pounds of Muscle in 28 Days.
Yeah.
That hit the Dig front page and took down my whole fucking site. And it was like a big deal. And that was a very important defining moment for me. I remember, Dig was extremely powerful for a very long time.
Yeah, it was. And because of a lot of that, the press used to always love to like sit down with us and be like, what do you think about your audience and like the fact that they make these types of comments about certain users and, or there's a post about, certain ladies in bikinis and they hit the front page and it got all these clicks and all these men are saying these really crude things. Like, how does that make you feel? And I felt like I was always being hit with all of these kind of like, you suck. Tell us why you don't suck. Questions, you know, that I was just like, you know what? You're right. We do suck. You know, it's like, that's the only thing you can do.
Yeah, like, look, humanity's fucking brutal.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I'm sorry.
I'm like,
if you have how many monthly unique visitors do you have?
38 million was
the
highest.
It's like, so if you take
38
like,
million people in a sandbox,
1,000 assholes in a fucking auditorium, like you're going to have not assholes. I'm sorry. Like 1,000 people in an auditorium. Like, think of any school play, right? Or like any little league game.
Right.
And
it's always going to be a heckler.
And you have like 300 dads. They're always going to be four fucking asshole dads who are like yelling and screaming and blue in the face.
Right.
Like, so you take 38 million people and you extrapolate it out. Of course, you're going to have a fucking mess in your
hands. Yeah, it was so. I just realized that, like, at that point, you just got to surrender and not fight and just be like, listen. And it actually helps out a ton because people are like, oh, he's just human. I would say, every couple of years, I will come up with something idea wise that I have never seen done before. And so the thing that I enjoy more than anything else out of anything I've ever done in life, outside of like the emotional side of like, you know, finding your wife and dating and things like that, has to be
things like that.
Well, I'm just saying like that's another thing because that's awesome too. But I'm saying like, career wise has to be those moments where you have those original ideas, you know, that come to you that you're just like, this has never been done before. And you prototype it and you build it and you look at it and you're just like, wow, like, I don't know if this is ever going to be anything big, but I'm the first person that thought of this. Like that is a really cool idea. And like we had, you know, maybe 10 or 15 moments throughout Dig's history where we were the first ones to do some of these things. And like, that is the coolest feeling, man. When you create something that like millions of people end up using and you're just like, dude, I made that. Yeah. Like, it's like, you feel so emotionally tied to it. And then you also, you know, it's funny. It's because we built a lot of stuff very early days at Dig that went on to be used in many other products, including everything from, you know, stupid things like Facebook using a like button when we like created social voting way back in the day and had it spread to profiles and a lot of the kind of nuts and bolts of how that stuff worked. Yeah. Like a lot of that eventually, you know, some of the comment stuff that we did with the voting and like a lot of like really crazy stuff we did on like showing real time data around votes and like all this stuff eventually made it into much bigger products than what we had created. But dude, to know that you were there for a minute and played a little role in that, that, you know, that was really cool. Like, I can remember when like Zuckerberg came down to my office at Dig, sat on my floor with his flip flops on, you know, Facebook at the time was like smaller than Dig and was like shooting the shit with me about like what he wanted to build at Facebook and like, you know, thought we were the shit. And I was like, damn, that was, you know, now that I look back on that, at the time I was like, who is this kid? But now I look back on that and I'm like, dude, that's so cool. Like that was like a moment where like we had created something that he was like caught up in and thought it was really cool and baked some of those ideas into some of the stuff that he built and went on to obviously launch to an audience that's 100x what we ever were.
Yeah.
But like, dude, just being a part of that, like that whole movement was something that I will forever cherish, you know? Yeah. And it's like your question is like, what am I really good at? It's like, I enjoy those moments. And I think that like, if anything I can bring to my, like the people that have followed my work and that continue to follow the stuff that I do, I hope to have a few more of those in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And be able to actually launch some stuff that people are like, wow, it doesn't have to be big. It can be super small. It just, yeah. I want people to think like, wow, that's something I've never seen before. Yeah.
And I can very clearly identify this like 14, 15, 16 year old period where I was very lucky to encounter certain people who had a huge formative impact on my development. In that period, I feel like I needed good guidance. I needed good leaders. I didn't need, nor would I have in retrospect wanted someone to say, you decide what you want to do. I don't know. Maybe that's me being naive, but I really feel like at that point in time, I need someone to show me how to follow a good structure as opposed to invent my own. Hmm. What are your thoughts?
I think everyone's different. I think that certainly that approach is one that is probably a little bit more traditional. I mean, that's the way things are today, right? Like, people are saying, like, this is the class you have to take. This is the thing that you have
to... Well, I mean, but there's a difference between taking, say, 4 years of undergrad doing all the fucking bullshit. I mean, I finished and I got my degree from Princeton. Great and fantastic. And there are a lot of fucking retards who graduate from Princeton and every other Ivy League school. But people think I'm smart because I have that on my resume or whatever, which is silly, but that's the way it is. I think there's that, which is 4 years versus having a good, like, Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I do think it's hard to go from, like, being born to being your own Obi-Wan Kenobi as opposed to having someone in between who really puts you in check when you're just being an arrogant prick as a 15-year-old, which, like, perhaps it's not applicable to females. I can't speak to that because I'm not a woman, but... Like, every 15-year-old dude thinks he knows everything about fucking everything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you need, like, you need an elder to just be like,
no,
that's
doubt.
Great. I'm glad you're confident. But, like, let me show you how this shit actually works. And, like, I'm going to push you to the breaking point. And you don't think you can do it, but I think you can do it. So I'm going to push you even further. And I remember just having this particular mentor of mine, Mr. Buxton, who is an amazing, amazing, amazing guy. The CEO of Donors Choose, for instance, and founder of Donors Choose. I mean, you look at my wrestling team and you can telescope them out to these amazing outcomes, and all of them, without exception, in my experience so far, I attributed it back to Mr. Buxton being a fucking, like, brilliant hard ass in wrestling. Like, he would not, you thought you could give 7. He'd be like, no, 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 you can give 10. And he would just push you to the breaking point. And that was just, like, whenever I face anything that is difficult in my life, I look back on my experience when I was high school, and it's like, all right, is this harder than what Mr. Buxton pushed me to do? No, it isn't. Therefore, I can do it.
I think there's something to be said about, like, choosing your own path, but I think that once you've chosen that path, there's I agree that, like, you can. There's no reason why you can't have a hard ass under that particular, like, vertical of whatever you've chosen, right? Like, if you say, okay, I want to get into computer science, like, you can have a badass, like, hard ass in computer science that, like, drives you to be the best, right? Like, I feel the same way. Like, I have a trainer at the gym. And why? Because I'll push myself to a freaking 6 if I'm left to my own devices. If I go in with the trainer, I'm going 11 and walking out of there sore as hell and can barely limp back to my vehicle.